You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
We are gathered here as advisors, as scientists.
The kind of place you expect a ghost to like to wander.
I'll help you. I'm something of a witch.
Welcome to Mission Spooky. I'm your host for today, Cord. And with me, as per usual, is the queen of everything, Kiki. What's up, Kiki?
I'm doing fine, Cord.
That's good. That's real good.
We're going to talk about some really awesome shit today, Cord.
I like woods.
I like hikes in the woods. It's too bad JC can't be here today.
What a nerd.
We might lose JC for the next episode, too. His work schedule for, like, actual work has been insane. So, poor dude is just having to work overtime, and that's screwing up our entire schedule to record with him. So it is what it is. We'll get him back. Might have to go break into his place of business and rescue him from overtime. Or not, because I guess he needs the money. I don't know. He might get mad at us.
I mean, money's good.
He might be like, put me back. I'm getting paid a lot of money for this. I want a movie about that. Yeah, somebody going to rescue somebody and then be like, no, I like it here in prison. I get 3 meals a day and it's safe.
I like it here in the cold.
D&D adventure. So, couple quick things before we get started. One of them, so I asked the question on Twitter with only 4 votes as a result. So man, my goth people were not showing up for this poll. I was like, is Sisters of Mercy a goth band or not? You know, kind of like yes, no, or it's whatever Andrew Eldritch says it is, right? Because, you know, it's his band. And he insists that they're not goth, which I think there comes a point when your product takes off and you don't get to choose anymore what it is. Because the fans have spoken for you.
Yeah, kind of.
And usually that's actually okay. Andrew, you're a goth band. People love and adore you. Let it go. It's fine. Does the label take anything away from you? Not really. If anything, it bolsters you, right? You've got this huge following of goth kids that love you. And baby bats who are listening, I'm going to do some really cool shit coming in October, having to deal with music. I'm very excited about it. So anyway, Sisters is still one of my all-time favorite bands, right? So I'm kind of like, does it matter? Well, you guys who did poll, you overwhelmingly said, yes, they are a goth band. The one person was like, it's whatever Andrew says it is. And I get that. Don't be respectful. But just because he says it doesn't make it true. He's wrong. You're wrong, Andrew. You're a goth band. Get the fuck over it.
Yeah. Sure.
I know you don't care. It's okay. The second thing is that for the first time in a couple of years now, we had not had baby foxes actually on premises. We had the foxes. We had mom and dad hunting and hanging out here, but we didn't see any babies. They decided that they were going to take a rocky area that has a bit of a depression in it because of all the rain we've been having. Turns out these are boulders that were moved from the foundation and put aside, and now it's just causing all kinds of like issues with there being a, it's like not an actual sinkhole, it's, you know, kind of a man-made problem.
Fun.
Right? So they decided they were going to just take it over, and they built a fox den in there in the front yard. Now, when I say in the front yard, I mean like 20 feet away from the front door.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. In the morning I get up and there's little baby foxes sitting on the front porch waiting for me. Of course they run away when you open the door, but they're fucking cute as hell. They're running all over the back porch, which the deck is old, so I've been tearing it up, and now I'm kind of in a holding pattern because I'm like, well, I can't go out there with the saw and the circular saw and like cut everything up because they're all over the place.
Right.
And then Mama got hurt. She's been limping around. She hurt her front paw, but I think that's because she was fighting a raccoon the other day, which, by the way, they left me a lot of really fucking cool bones. So yay, foxes. Got some raccoon bones. Oh, man. I love foxes. But anyway, that's on the home front. That's the exciting woot woot.
Animals.
Yes. So when we first discussed doing these summertime fun time episodes, I thought this one especially was going to be kind of a straightforward. How many hikes could you possibly go on that are haunted, right? I mean, well, it turns out that in our neck of the woods, and I shouldn't be surprised by the number of ghost stories there are, but there's a plethora of ones attached to hikes, or at least some really nice walks. Because, you know, forests and mountains aren't creepy enough.
I don't think forests and mountains are creepy.
Neither do I. I'm saying that for our listeners, because apparently forests and mountains are rated as like one of the creepiest places, according to the YouTube poll. So,
I mean, I guess maybe if you didn't live there your whole life, but...
Yeah, I'm kind of like, okay, well, I guess they can be creepy, but yeah, I'm used to it, so I love it. Today is not going to be an extensive list of hikes, but I did focus on New England, number one, due to the sheer volume of material in just those states alone. And I was thinking originally that like our listeners might be going to New England, heading up there for a summer trip, especially listeners from, you know, this area. I myself am trying to get up to Maine, so we'll see if that happens this year. This turned out to be something really specific. It kind of turned into something really cool, as in there's a map. So this starts only 4.5 hours away from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And today we're going to focus on haunted hikes and trails of the Berkshires of Massachusetts. I have compiled a list of what I think are the most compelling and most historically significant locations, and honestly, some of the most beautiful locations I've ever seen. And they can easily be visited on a long weekend tour. They're kind of one after the other, and I'm going to start with the one that's furthest away from Allentown, which is the 4.5 hours away. And you start there, and you can just work your way south, a little bit southwest, a little bit southeast, and then, you know, come home. We're going to take a quick break for our sponsor and a promo from one of our other podcast buddies. And when we get back, we'll get into 8 of the hottest paranormal and gorgeous locations in the Berkshires.
Hell yeah.
Ooh, I've been dying to try this place.
Oh my god, me too. I've heard such good things about it.
Welcome to the Crime Diner. I'm Cindy. I'll be cooking for you this evening. Here are your menus.
Ooh, what are you thinking about getting?
I don't know. Murder with a side of cannibalism? What about you?
Ooh, that sounds good. I'm torn between historical mayhem and the social injustice, maybe?
Oh.
I just want to let you know that each episode comes with dinner, dessert, and a specialty drink chosen by yours truly.
Wine, Dine, and Storytime has had a makeover, and we invite you to slide into the booth with us at the Crime Diner, where each week we will discuss a crime over dinner, drinks, and dessert. See you there!
Hey everybody, welcome back. Hey Kiki, I have a question for you.
Oh, this better be a joke. I'm ready.
What do you call a supreme ruler who enjoys hiking?
It's not like the obvious thing, like a high king, right?
No.
You know, that would be too perfect.
Not that obvious, but you are going to kick yourself over it.
I'm sure I am. I'm getting ready.
Roman emperor. Got him in one.
We do have a story today that is tied to Rome in a very strange way. Nice job, Cord.
Well, I did it. Congratulations, me.
Okay, we're going to get into it because this is going to take a minute. There is so much going on in the Berkshires, it's not even funny, but as I said, I have taken 8 of the best places to visit.
Dive deep, fam.
And the coolest thing is that I didn't really know about any of these places before delving into them, so it was cool. All right, number one, the Bellows Pipe Trail of Mount Greylock. Doesn't that sound like an adventure? Going to Mount Greylock.
Yeah, that's about as D&D as you can get.
Oh, shit.
Are we going to fight Skeletor up there or what, buddy?
Well, it is supposedly haunted. It is the highest peak in Massachusetts, And if you want to take the same route that Henry David Thoreau took in July of 1844, then this hike is for you. The recreating of this hike has become an annual tradition for some, and the ascent, beginning at Bellows Pipe Trailhead, takes you on a 5.5 mile trek, or 11 if you're planning on returning. I highly suggest the returning part, just FYI. After a few hours of hiking, you will come to an elevation of about 900 feet and the notch known as the Bellows Pipe. The area is rumored to be haunted by the ghost of, well, not Thoreau, but of a forlorn farmer named William Saunders, or known by the local nickname, the Old Coot.
Got him.
And I really wish that JC was here to make fun of that. So the story goes that William Saunders moved to North Adams with his wife Belle and their two children to start a farm on the outskirts of town. With hard work, the family's farm became prosperous until the Civil War begins. And that's when William joins the Union Army, leaving his family behind. He was severely injured in battle, and his family received word that he was near death and not expected to survive. With no further news of him, everyone assumed that he had died, and Belle remarried the farmhand William had hired, and he also adopted their children. Years later, a mysterious stranger arrived in town, wearing a ragged blue uniform and speaking no words. No one recognized the stranger as William Saunders, who had become emaciated and unrecognizable from his time at war. Everyone instead referred to him as the Old Coot. And apparently, when he learned of his wife's remarriage, most likely heartbroken, he decided to retreat to the nearby woods of the eastern slope of Mount Greylock, where he built a shack and lived as a hermit for many years, taking odd jobs but never revealing his true identity.
Right.
One mid-January morning, after a fierce winter storm had blown through, a couple of hunters came upon his shack and found that the Old Coot was dead, his body frozen in his bed under a drift of snow. Personal effects, including discharge papers, identified him as William Saunders. Reports of his ghost being seen in the area soon circulated, and an uncredited newspaper article in 1939 documented his story, along with the blurry photograph purported to be of his ghost. The photographer claimed to have taken the picture during a, quote, ghost-raising expedition. And that is, I think, what we should just call ghost hunting from now on. Ghost raising expedition. I love the word expedition.
Sure.
And this reporter went on to describe the Old Coot specter as skinny, ragged man in Civil War uniform who disappeared into the air. Actually, he disappeared into thin air.
Poof.
To be more exact. The air was thin that he disappeared into. So I think that's a very interesting story. This is definitely one of the hikes that you would take if you're a more experienced hiker.
Rocky or steep?
Came in at like, not exactly a expert level, but both. Kind of rocky, little bit steep, you know, like for some people. I think anybody in the area who's been up to Hawk Mountain, one of the harder trails at Hawk Mountain, could probably do this one no problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked at it and I was like, that is a long ass, that's a 5 mile hike. I mean, that's where the stamina has to come in, you know, I would do it. I would try to do it. Number two on the list. Oh, this one's so great. And I got an excerpt to read you guys. It is so awesome. It's called The Devil's Altar at Wizard's Glen. Talk about a fucking D&D.
Dude. What?
Yeah. The Devil's Altar at Wizard's Glen.
Yeah, that's... Who made this shit up, man?
I am going to tell you guys that I thought this was total bullshit. I was like, there is no fucking way that there is a place that's actually called Wizard's Glen. But not only is it called that, but it's from a book, like an actual freaking book that you can read right now online. Yeah, I'm going to read an excerpt from the book as well. And it's pretty amazing. Okay, but I'll get to that in a second. So this place is located between Dalton and Lanesboro in Massachusetts. Again, this is all Berkshires of Massachusetts. Wizard's Glen is a high point on Gulf Road, which gets its name from the title of Chapter 7 of Godfrey Greylock's book entitled Tagnik, or Letters and Legends About Our Summer Home. Now, Godfrey Greylock is the pseudonym of writer Joseph Edward Adams Smith. That guy does not need another name attached to his name. It's too many names. As I said, you can read the entire account in the book using Google Books. It is free. but I want to read an excerpt from it. This is the description of the place, and it is as follows. But the best is to mark how the most humanly merry laughter and the gentlest of gentle voices catch a fiendish echo from the rocky hollows. There is diablerie in the very air, the fairest form I ever knew, as it rose from behind one of those enchanted rocks, looked weird as Lilith, the first wife of Adam. Hecate herself could not have emerged from Hades with half the infernal grace and beauty. I am sure the place is bewitched. Tradition indeed says that before the decay of the native tribes, of whom a scanty remnant were found by the white men in the valley of Housatonic, this used to be a favorite haunt of the Indian priests or wizards. Here it was said, they wrought their hellish incantations and with horrible rites offered up human sacrifice to Hobo Moko, the spirit of evil. One broad square rock, which chanced to stand alone in the midst of a conveniently clear space, had a credit of being the devil's altar stone. Some crimson stains marked its upper surface, upon which the earlier settlers could not look without a shudder. They were believed to come from the blood of frequent victims.
Spooky.
Although nowadays, a skeptic with no analysis at all would find little difficulty in resolving them into traces of iron ore. For my part, until the analysis is made, I hold fast to the older and better opinion of those who believed that around this ensanguined shrine, a spectral crew of savage wizards nightly reenacted the revolting orgies of the past. That is metal as fuck.
Sure is.
That is written in 1852 about this place. So it's real, y'all. I mean, as far as like it being a real place. Named so in 1852. So here is the basic gist of the story, though, that goes with it. And you can read the story in its entirety within that book, like I said, is free through Google Books.
Cool.
A deer hunter named Chamberlain had killed a deer near Wizard's Glen in 1770. While he was dressing the animal, a sudden thunderstorm struck. Seeking shelter beneath a boulder, he witnessed a terrifying sight. A group of macabre specters appeared in the clefts among the boulders, with a Satan-like figure dripping blood in the center. Another flash of lightning revealed that the phantoms were holding a maiden captive, preparing her for sacrifice. Chamberlain attempted to save the girl by holding out a Bible and invoking the Lord's name. A loud crash of thunder ended the storm, and the unholy spectacle vanished in a flash of light. When Chamberlain went to retrieve his deer, it was gone. Today, visitors report feeling an icy chill in the area, even on hot and still summer afternoons.
Spooky. So there's a draft.
Yeah, I don't care. Like, even if it's not actually haunted, that book reading alone would get me there.
Oh yeah, I'm totally in.
Next stop on our trek is number 3, Springfield Park, which is only a 10-minute drive south of Wizard's Glen.
Hell yeah.
In the late 19th century, the Elmhurst House, now known as Springside House, was possibly the site of a gruesome crime. I'm not joking when I say gruesome. It's the dismembered torso of an unidentified human was discovered nearby, and the killer was never caught. I have to say unidentified human corpse, I guess, because to make certain that people did know that this was not, you know, the corpse of a dog or a cow or, you know. So folklorist Joe Derwin, he goes into this murder in a little bit of detail in an interview that he did, but that was supposed to be based on something from his blog, which is called These Mysterious Hills. Now, These Mysterious Hills is an awesome blog. I loved reading a lot of the stories. Derwin, I am kind of like legit looking to maybe get him on the show. He is a folklorist and he's worked with on William Shatner's new show, The Unexplained, or like newer show.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so he's done some research for that show. So he's legit. The only problem is that I could not find on his blog this particular story. I could only find an interview that he did talking about the story. So that was a little annoying because I was just wondering where he got the information from. And like I said, I know he's legit. Like if you read the rest of the stories in the blog, like he'll tell you, you know, where the things came from, this newspaper article or this person was interviewed or whatever. It was just weird. I couldn't find it on his blog, but I definitely think that you should go read it. It's cool. Actually, there's a few things on there that I wouldn't mind talking with him about. So we'll see. So I did try to do some extra research on this, and I couldn't find anything. It's possible that this particular story hasn't made the internet like anywhere else. Maybe it was microfiche that he was looking at, or he had access to old archives, you know, paper archives, and he is from the Berkshire, so he lives there.
Right.
But I left it in here because Derwin mentions another murder or possible murder when a skull of a young woman is found in the Pittsfield State Forest, which is only 10-minute drive from Springside House, which that is on his blog. If you just read through it, just type in skull and that'll come up.
Ooh.
Yeah. The remains of the body were never found of that skull. Okay. That was thought that it belonged to a 22-year-old woman named Catherine Hull, who had disappeared in 1936. In that article, he talks about how there's some speculation from another author how these three murders that happened all kind of like one after another could have been attributed to a serial killer that was from the 30s into the 50s. So I thought that was kind of interesting. In any case, some people believe that this area, because of this torso being found, is haunted, and they see a spectral floating head. This is seen from the residence on the west side of North Street, which is across the street from Springside House, and that they just call this spectral figure the head, and it supposedly resembles a ghastly skull with remnants of decomposed skin.
Ooh, gross.
I'm like, okay, that sounds a little bit over the top.
I want to see it.
I want to see it. I want to see the ghostly skull, damn it. I wanted to keep it on the list, though, because it's definitely a true crime stop-off for some people might find that interesting. And because Springside House in the park is only a 10-minute drive into that forest where the other skull was found, yeah, something funky was going on in that area. Whether it was like a serial killer or just some kind of, you know, coincidence that these people died. Because I tried to do some math on that one. I was like, well, if this one was found in the 1890s, right, the torso, but the skull wasn't found until 36, and then the other murders were in the 50s, yeah, that's a little bit too much time. Like, they're probably not all connected. Even if the person, possible serial killer, like, started killing when he was 17 or 18, he's still going to be in his 70s by the time, you know?
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch.
And I'm not saying that 70-year-old men can't kill people, because, oh yeah, I mean, there's an 80-something who just, you know, murdered or shot somebody recently, so.
Hey.
Yeah. So I kept that one on the trail because I do think it's interesting.
Sure, yeah.
Number four. Ah, this is my favorite one because it's called October Mountain.
Of course.
Shout out to Edward October for October Pod. I just did narration for him of a ghost story that's going to be coming out in July. And they're all original ghost stories. So I was just doing the narrating for him. Awesome story and a lot of fun and great podcast. Please go listen to Edward if you're not already, because you may be. And if you are, thank you. Deep within the reclaimed wilderness of October Mountain State Forest lies an abandoned cemetery where the infamous ghost of Anna Pease, a 10-year-old girl who died on January 22nd, 1829, is said to roam. Witnesses have reported seeing a ghostly specter wearing a white dress and hearing a strange humming noise. For me, this is one of those stories where the locals probably clung to something tangible to explain why they were seeing a ghostly figure. Like, let's pick a grave that matches with what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Because there's no, like, why? You know, like, you're a 10-year-old and you're haunting your grave.
I think you'd want to be like anywhere else.
Yeah, I'm not one of these people who readily believes that a ghost is haunting a cemetery. In the past, we've covered like a cemetery. I believe we covered it, or maybe I was just reading about it. But either way, like the ones where the mom is lamenting the death of her children. So she'll, like, her ghost will come to the cemetery and stand at their grave sites.
Right.
I could understand where we talk about, like, where a piece of yourself during a tragedy like that might get left behind. Maybe that's a shadow, literally, of, like, what happened. Like, you're there. But, yeah, I wish there was more about her, too. There's no, like, and it's, like, they'll admit, like, anybody telling the story will admit this. They have no idea the story of Anna Pease. Like, this is not something that's been written down historically. Yes, her grave is there, but that's it. Nothing else is known about it. We don't even know if it was tragic or if it, you know, like, if it was an accident or did she just get sick? You know, like, shit happens. I mean, still a 10-year-old passing is obviously tragic, but you know what I mean? Like, the difference between, like, a horrific death versus, well, she just passed away in her sleep. You know, she got sick. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Am I making any sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just feel like a lot of those stories with kids involved, there's usually some reason. There's something, like, a little bit more in-depth there that we don't have any idea, like, what the fuck's going on. My other favorite thing about October Mountain has to do with the surrounding area. So the area, like, kind of around the cemetery.
Right.
Which was once a game reserve and owned by William C. Whitney, the Secretary of the Navy under President Grover Cleveland. So Whitney owned about 14,000 acres when he started his, like, side project here.
Yeah.
It made him the largest landowner in Massachusetts. And the short story around this is that Whitney knew of troubles the farmers were having in this area. It wasn't as conducive to farming as people thought it was going to be, is the basic gist. So he goes around offering top dollar for every farm, every piece of land that he can possibly get his hands on. Only he did it anonymously. Yeah, he basically had, like, a New York realtor go out and just start approaching all these farmers and being like, hey, we'll give you $5 an acre for all this land, which was way more than they paid for it, by the way. He was not fucking these people over. He was giving them, like, more, way more, right? So his goal was to purchase all this land unsuitable for farming and build his hunting lodge, known as the Antlers, and a newlywed cottage known as the Nest. And that cottage was for his son, Harry Payne Whitney, who some people might recognize that name as I did and went, oh my God, he married Gertrude Vanderbilt.
Ew.
I forgot about it. I was like, oh yeah, you know what? I just recently did some research on Gertrude and the Vanderbilt family, but I didn't get that far into Harry Payne Whitney, like, his actual background. So I was like, oh, I recognize the name. Awesome. He then turned that entire area into a game preserve. And he imported exotic animals, buffalo, angora, goats, moose. At one point, he owned over 180 elk.
Damn.
He also stocked up the streams and the ponds of October Mountain with trout and bass, and even began stocking game birds such as pheasants.
Ooh.
At one point, Whitney paid 50% of the town of Washington, Massachusetts taxes. As in paying more than his fair share because he was filthy fucking rich. I have looked everywhere to find out if this guy was an actual asshole, and I cannot find anything at all. No one will say a bad word about this dude. Probably because he may have been one of the last true philanthropists on the planet. Game reserve, giving extra money to the farmers, flipping, paying extra in taxes to help out the town. I mean, isn't that what rich people are supposed to do, is be helpful? I don't know.
No.
I
they
know.
They don't do that.
Anyway.
They do the whole dragon thing. You can't have my gold.
I know, right? So anyway, after the death of his beloved wife, Sybil, due to injuries sustained during a horse riding accident, Whitney began losing interest in the Antlers and the October Mountain Estate. He died in 1904 of appendicitis. The state would eventually buy back 16,000 acres of land from the family, as he had acquired more since he moved up there, and they've turned it into the state park that it is today. Unfortunately, the Antlers caught fire by lightning strike, and the Nest fell apart because it hadn't been cared for in years.
Damn.
I know. Now, there are pictures that exist of this, and if you look it up, it's amazing. By our standards today, we would have looked at a house like that and said, that's pretty freaking cool to be a, quote, hunting lodge, okay? And the cottage was cute, quaint, by Vanderbilt standards. And that's also what made it so, I think, endearing to people. Now, the inside was supposed to be, like, absolutely amazing. Polished wood floors, you name it, the whole nine yards, right?
Right.
But the fact that he didn't seem to go, like, completely overboard with this, like, for example, he didn't build Biltmore Estate, okay? That's, I think that's where I'm going with this. He could have, he totally could have, but he was like, nah, man, it's for hunting. It's for the guys. We don't need to be too fancy. So supposedly, though, Whitney still haunts the ruins of his estate, and you can find it. Actually, the ruins are they're located on Lenox and Whitney Place Road on October Mountain. And there is a map of Washington, Massachusetts from 1904 to substantiate where the house would have been. So that's very interesting. Again, the place is gorgeous with or without the houses, you know, standing. The funny part about this is that somewhere along the line, another story pops up, and that is that the area is home to vampire bats, quote, horned devils, and glowing-eyed beasts, which some claim are the descendants of Whitney's game escapees roaming the woods. However, I'm sure that you all are smart enough to understand that this is complete bullshit.
No.
Yeah.
What? That sounds totally legit.
I know. I'm really sorry that there's no vampire bats.
I want vampire bats.
I wouldn't even mind it. Like, but here's the thing, though, Cord. There might be one creature that lurks in the woods of October Mountain, and that is none other than the Big B himself.
Bigfoot.
Bingo. October Mountain has been a hot spot for paranormal activity for centuries. Sightings of Bigfoot date all the way back to 1765, with perhaps the most famous recording occurring in the late summer of 1983. That's when four friends were enjoying a cookout near Camp Eagle, which was an abandoned Boy Scout camp off the shore of Felton Pond. They heard some rustling noises in the bushes nearby. They kind of ignore this at first, but then, you know, they want to investigate. They want to go see what's going on. Hell, I just did that today. Of course, it was broad daylight, but, you know, I'm here. I was like, what is that noise? Oh, let me see. Is it one of the foxes? One of the fox babies? Yeah, it was a stupid bird. Anyway, they go out to investigate and they see a huge bipedal creature standing on two legs in the moonlight less than 100 yards away from them. This sighting is so terrifying that it makes local newspapers.
Ooh.
Yeah. So October Mountain, baby. Good for everything.
What year was that?
That was 1983.
Interesting.
The most famous sighting. And that's going to bring us to number 5, Beckett Land Trust Historic Quarry and Forest, which is located just 21 minutes east of October Mountain. And you're going to find this to be a nice, easy hike. October Mountain listed like mid-grade, by the way, like mid-grade to easy hike. This one's a super easy hike. This one is made for families. So if you have kids, not a problem. Also a very educational area as well. A lot of people don't know, in Massachusetts, quarries were once a booming industry, and it's likely that many of the granite structures that you see in Boston today came from places like this historic quarry. The quarry was operational from 1860s to the 1960s, and now the once thriving business has been replaced by a peaceful landscape of nettles, vegetation, and the occasional slinking brown snake. I love that. I added that in there. It's like, yes, little baby brown snakes.
Every now and then you get a little slither boy.
Mm-hmm. A little snick. While hiking in the area, some visitors have reported hearing strange noises that sound like men are still working in the quarry. Paranormal investigators have had similar experiences, with summertime being the most active and even more so towards what would have been quitting time.
Right.
Some of it, people have said, oh, I hear the actual machinery running, which of course there isn't any. Well, not running. I'll get to that in a second. At the end of the day, right, when it would be like quitting time or like, you know, early afternoon, late afternoon, depending on shift changes, they swear they hear people talking. Now, you're kind of like, okay, well, it's a quarry and it is a public place and you can go there and then people visit it all the time. So are you hearing voices of just people talking? Like, you know, living human beings.
Right.
Is it just bouncing off of the forest differently? Because hell, I know that I have the same problem out here. You can't tell sometimes which direction something's coming from.
Very true.
Or is it like the real thing? So I may dismiss like the talking, but I think that the sound of machinery is pretty weird, right? I mean, it's not happening.
Yeah, that would be hard to replicate.
Yeah. So as I said, the trails here are very gentle for hikers with kids, loaded with wedges of granite, rusted vehicles, and quarry equipment, even an abandoned wood stove in the middle of the forest. That was a pretty cool picture. I was thinking, I wanted to make sure I added this one, because not only is it a really cool place, it's a really easy hike, it's educational, but it does remind me, though, of Constitution Drive, where folks think they can hear the sounds of working trains when nothing is going on there anymore.
Interesting.
You know, not in those sections anymore. So, you know, it's definitely worth the mention. Just a heads up, though, this one is a $10 parking fee that gets you into the park as well. And they had to add that because many people were doing really stupid things.
Oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, like littering, vandalism, and getting drunk, and apparently being nasty to animals, which is a big no-no in my book anyway, along with the littering and vandalism. I mean, if you get drunk and you're not stupid about it, whatever, but I mean,
yeah.
Apparently, Reggie's like, no, yeah, bad. Don't get drunk and stupid.
Or stupid drunk. There's a difference.
And the worst one is jumping into the pool filled with the remains of cables and old quarry equipment. I mean, why? Why would you, is that because you were drunk? Maybe. So basically, this is a fee that I call the don't become a ghost fee.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because most people aren't going to pay $10 to park your car, which, as I'm saying, essentially gets you into the park.
Right.
If they're going to be dumb.
True.
So they take that money and they put it towards the park, obviously. That's cool. I did notice some of the pictures that people put online of this. When I say that there's rusted equipment and stuff, there's also like big signs and like tablets put out by the state that tell you what the equipment was, what it was used for. So it's kind of like an outdoor museum. Basically.
Interesting.
Yeah, they just left everything in place, which maybe that's why it's haunted. Who knows, right? I mean, what if people are attached to the stuff? And that's why it sounds like the stuff is being used.
Possibility.
Number 6 on this list, which is the Ashen Tully Egyptian curse.
That one sounds a little weird.
This one sounds like Kiki does not agree with it at all, but it's a fun story.
Egyptian curse, huh?
It's educational. And the place is gorgeous. So this is only a 30-minute drive south of Beckett Quarry, and it is the remains of Ashen Tully, the former estate of Rob de Paista Titus. I wish JC was here to make fun of some of these names.
What
damn it.
On earth.
Paister Titus, which has the Polish spelling. So, this one's a long one. It's good though. So, April of 1952, a fire destroys 600 acres of woodland in Tyringham, Monterey, Otis, and East Otis, including the Ashen Tully Mansion, which had been built by Rob Titus and his wife Grace in 1910. The couple fell in love with the area during their honeymoon in 1903 and created an estate of 1,500 acres. So Rob Titus was born into a wealthy family in Asheville, North Carolina. Shout out to Asheville. He graduated from Yale in 1897 and became an illustrator before developing an interest in archaeology. Much like Howard Carter was an illustrator and drawing, right? We talked about that in our Curse of King Tut episode. In 1903, he married Grace and he published his first book about the palace of King Amenhotep III in Egypt, where he had helped excavate with famed archaeologists Percy Newberry and Howard Carter. Fuck yeah! I love it. So after returning to Tyringham in 1904, and maybe it's Tyringham, I actually didn't look up that how to say that one, so sorry, Mass. I think it's Tyringham. The couple lived in a farmhouse and started breeding horses, cattle, and sheep. In 1910, however, they completed the construction of Ashen Tully Mansion, which was designed by architect Francis Hoppin. The mansion is nicknamed the Marble Palace and had 35 rooms, including a 2-story library. Oh, God, I would have loved that so much. Oh, God, fuck. And a music room and a dining room. A drawing room, and 10 bathrooms.
Jeez Louise.
But Rob Titus would not enjoy the summer home for very long. He would die in Saranac Lake, New York, where he was being treated for advanced tuberculosis in August of 1913. Very disappointing.
The old TB.
After Rob's death, Grace would spend time in London, and she rented out Ashen Tully to author Henry Adams, who was the great-grandson of President John Adams. And of course, the grandson of John Quincy Adams. Adams claimed that he was awoken several times by a, quote, talking painting. The painting was of an Italian woman, and Grace had suspected that it was stolen from a Roman palace and smuggled into this country. There's your Rome connection, baby.
Hey.
Bringing it back to the joke. I love how we never discuss, like, you just surprise us with the joke, and then somehow, like, it winds up being even better than you anticipated.
Yeah, it's happened a couple times now.
I know. So she claimed the painting was found hidden in a crate of furniture the family had purchased, and that it might have been hidden there by art smugglers. So they just found it and then wound up hanging it up in the house because they're like, well, you know, we don't know where it came from. We just figured it was part of the furniture collection that we bought. Come to find out later, it might have been worth, you know, more. But anyway.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, Grace Titus fell and broke her hip in October of 1928 while she was staying in Ashentully. And after spending 9 days in the hospital, she returned to the estate only to pass away from a heart attack.
Oof.
Tragedy struck the family once again in 1933 when her daughter Mildred fell asleep at the wheel while driving back home to Springfield from a visit to Ashentully, ultimately succumbing to her injuries. These unfortunate events led John B. Knox, an AP News features writer, to discuss a whispered rumor about the family being cursed in a 1951 article regarding the decline of the, quote, dreamlike palaces of Berkshire Hills.
Hmm.
Knox wrote that Ashentully, the estate of Egyptologist Ron de Peyster Titus, outmatched even Shadowbrook. One day we'll talk about Shadowbrook. It's not happening today. Some believed that the family had entered the wrath of Egypt's deceased kings by disturbing their slumber. Dun, dun, dun.
Hell yeah.
Through the next few years, Ashentully would pass through the family and on to a lumbering company. The locals got really pissed about it. And there was so much of a hubbub that the half-brother to the remaining Titus daughter, Victoria, John S. McLennan Jr., brought the estate for $18,000.
Dang.
I would like to just make a note here that Victoria sold off everything in the house first. What she didn't sell, because 80% of it belonged to Egypt. I mean, her dad straight up stole it from Egypt.
Yeah.
All the Egyptian artifacts were donated to area museums. And then anything else in the house that wasn't an artifact was sold for her benefit.
Right.
I'm only saying this because that mansion, it cost them close to $1 million to build in their 1910, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. Yeah. She sells it to her half-brother for $18,000, or it gets sold to him eventually. For only $18,000.
That is pretty damn bonkers.
So John and his wife Catherine attempted to live in Ashentully, but they just couldn't seem to make it work. The place was enormous, and what it came down to, I think, for them was it was just way too much of a house for them to handle. He was actually a pretty famous music composer, classical music composer. So, I don't even think it was the question of rehabilitating the site with the money. You know, like he bought it for he stole it. I'm like, come on. He basically stole it. Okay. Like 18,000. Yeah. The fuck, yeah. Dude. He and Catherine, they sell just Ashentully and part of the surrounding area for $35,000 in 1952. Just a few months before the fire breaks out, leaving only 4 Doric columns and the foundation behind. This poor house just got completely obliterated.
Gadzooks.
Those 4 columns are what you can go see today, along with parts of the original foundation. John and Catherine continued living in the farmhouse, which, if you remember, that was at the bottom of the estate, which Rob Titus and his wife lived in originally while the estate was being built. They created, when I say lavish gardens, I mean, they're going to say, this is like a quote, lavish gardens, in many, many blogs on the website dedicated to it. Like all of it, it says lavish. It's true. If you look at the pictures, it's just, there's no way else to explain it. It's beautiful. This all remains on the property. It was donated to the trustees of reservations, along with 120 acres in 1977. The gardens, which include the ruins of Ashantully, are open and free to all. Gardens are open daily from 10 to 5 from April through November. The ruins are open April through November from sunrise to sunset.
Cool.
And even if I do not at all believe that this place is cursed in any way, shape, or form, it is only 30 minutes away from the quarry. So you might as well just stop in there.
Yeah.
It is so beautiful. And then when you're done with that, you're going to head somewhere else that has a lot of controversy around it, which is only 30 minutes away, well, southwest-ish. And that is to the Thorn Reed Memorial UFO Monument Park.
Ooh.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
This is also not a hike, but again, 30-minute drive away from the place that technically is, oh, it's for hiking and trails and walking. Yeah, you might as well stop here. This was a UFO incident that I've never heard of. I'm like on the fence about UFO stuff, so I find it intriguing, but it's not my forte at all. Like, I just, you know.
I'm more into UFO stuff.
Right. Embark on a spine-tingling walk through the Thorn Reed Memorial UFO Monument Park, located in Sheffield, Massachusetts, where the Reed family experienced their legendary extraterrestrial encounter in 1969. I should just join like a travel agency.
Right? Spooky yeah. Travels?
Right? There actually is a Paranormal Berkshires like travel thing already, so.
Hell yeah.
Reed and his family were driving over the bridge. Now, this was a covered bridge, which, by the way, you cannot drive on presently, but you can go visit it. Reed and his family are driving on this bridge when they witnessed a strange sight. A bright light emerged from the Housatonic River, catching their attention. Suddenly, they found themselves transported to an airplane hangar where they spotted insect-like creatures. Although they were separated, they could still hear each other calling out. Just as mysteriously, they were back in the car. What's really interesting about that is that 40 other people reported seeing strange lights and saucer-like objects in the sky to the local radio station at the same night.
Interesting.
The Great Barrington Historical Society voted 6-3 to acknowledge the encounter as, quote, historically significant and true. So this would be the first time that a UFO sighting received that kind of recognition.
Huh.
A monument made of a 5,000-pound granite slab. Now, it'd be real funny if that granite came from the quarry that we just talked about. Along with solar lampposts and benches were erected near the covered bridge where the incident occurred to commemorate the nation's first off-world UFO encounter. Although, apparently, not everyone in the town was thrilled about this association. But Reed felt validated by the official recognition from the Historical Society, the state historians, and the governor. One would say this was a rare opportunity for a UFO witness to have their experience acknowledged in this way.
Right.
You think that has a happy ending, right? It sounds really awesome. It's all tied up in a bow and there's this beautiful memorial, except there's not.
Hmm.
Because something happened, and it was a lot for me to try to piece together, but as far as I can tell, and this comes from the UFO memorial people themselves. There was a response to this. So what happened was the granite piece was taken down by the city of Sheffield for what some of us might consider to be a dumb reason.
A dumb reason.
The response back said that, quote, the town of Sheffield installed the monument in 2015 via the DPW and a Boston law firm. But for unknown reasons, Nadine, a Sheffield selectman, put the town in a vulnerable position when she lied to the papers asserting that, quote, Reed installed the monument. Nadine later confessed and a new park centerpiece was added in 2019. So the granite slab had to get removed because it wasn't official, is the best that I can put together from the different things that I've read. And then apparently someone lied about it, saying that Reed had installed it, which would have made it unofficial, and so the town had to remove it for safety reasons.
Yeah, not sure about that.
Yeah, it's very strange. But in any case, this place has been featured on the History Channel, and I believe Unexplained Mysteries and Ancient Aliens. I hate to fucking say that, but
Ancient Aliens.
Yeah, I know. Fucking goddamn Ancient Aliens. But here's the thing. They helped put the new stuff up there. like the History Channel has given money to reinstall better centerpieces and things like that.
Cool.
Yeah. If you keep reading on their Facebook page from the, or I'm sorry, this came from TripAdvisor. He or she, whoever was in charge, was responding back to people saying they were a little disappointed. They were expecting something bigger, and then they had to tell everybody like why, what was happening, and how there was a dispute, and it was a bunch of balls. It's getting fixed little by little, and people are donating and adding new things to it. So,
sick.
Still a cool place to go visit. And there's a covered bridge. And who doesn't love a covered bridge?
I love covered bridges. I grew up right next to one.
Yeah, me too.
I think the one I grew up next to is the oldest one in PA. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, probably right.
It's very old. It had to be repaired, but that's because people are idiots.
Yeah.
They don't understand that when there's a 10-foot limit to your height, that doesn't mean that I can squeeze 11.
Yeah.
It means 10 foot or 12 or whatever the number was. Yeah, somebody tried to drive a backhoe on a trailer through it, and yeah.
Oh, geez.
I think that happened twice now.
Yeah, we have not covered, we have not covered bridges. I'll show myself out.
We're such nerds because bridges would be a fun episode.
Oh, we're going to do bridges because I have some tape back from 2019 when we first started the podcast, and I made my husband do the experiment on the Van Zandt Bridge, which is like pretty close to New Hope, right? And it's a crybaby bridge, and it has this whole history behind it.
Uh-huh.
Things to look forward to, possibly, I think October. I think that might be an October episode. And we're going to stop off now at our last stop, number 8, as promised, which is the ghost of Bash Bish Falls.
What'd you call me?
Listen here, Bish.
You out there Bish batching right now?
It's a sad story, though, so be quiet.
Why are you ending on the sad one? It's supposed to be fun.
Well, I mean, it is what it is, you know. Like, I can't. It's the bottom of the. It's the closest one home, so this is where you're going to end your trip because then you have less than, like, you have a 3 hours home ish, or like 2.5.
Fair.
So this is 25 minutes from, or 25 minutes west of Sheffield, Massachusetts, where we just left off with the UFOs, and it is the last destination of our hiking trip. Whew. Okay, man, I am famished from all this work that we've done. Bash Bish Falls, located in the Taconic Mountains in Berkshire County, is the highest waterfall in Massachusetts. So I've given you guys the highest mountain and the highest waterfall. So I'm saying, you got to go tripping with Kiki.
Hell yeah.
And I'm not talking about mushrooms.
Well.
Not all the time.
Not yet.
Not until they become legal. All right. So it's grandeur. With a total height of nearly 200 feet, is awe-inspiring as the water flows through a series of cascades before splitting into twin falls by a protruding boulder. The source of these beautiful waters is a spring in Mount Washington, which flows into Bash Bish Brook, joining the Hudson River and flowing into the Cape of Copaque, or Copaki, or I don't know, I'm not really sure. I forgot to look it up, but anyway. Despite the breathtaking scenery, however, Bash Bish Falls is known to be one of the, quote, America's most haunted destinations, with a chilling legend that adds to its allure. According to the story, a young Mohican woman named Bash Bish was accused of adultery and punished by being tied to a canoe and sent over the falls. At the moment of her descent, a halo of butterflies appeared, but her body was never found. Her daughter, White Swan, apparently heartbroken because she could not bear children, committed suicide by throwing herself over the same ledge sometime later. Since then, more than 25 people have lost their lives at Bash Bish Falls, mostly due to misjudged cliff jumps and falls. However, hikers have reported seeing a woman's apparition watching them behind the moving water. The summit offers a panoramic view of the Taconic Mountains, but climbers need to be cautious of the wire fence guarding the rocky summit because, you know, there's a strict no swimming rules to prevent further people from dying.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
Those rules are there for a reason. That's fair.
Yeah, yeah. So if you visit Bash Bish Falls, then please don't be a turd and try to kill yourself.
Yeah, that would be really dumb.
Or mostly just doing it on accident because people were trying to jump from like one part of the falls to the other, and that's usually wound up dying. Yeah.
Just... Yeah. This is not an anarchy moment. These rules are here for a very specific reason.
Yeah.
For your safety, please don't.
All right. So that's what I have for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed.
I'm tired just hearing about walking that far.
Well, I figure it's a 4-day weekend, Cord. You don't have to do it all in one day.
No. We're going to do it all in one, baby. Let's go.
Especially that 11-mile hike. I'm not sure that...
11 miles, that's not that bad.
Oh, man. Today is an awesome summertime song called When I Fall, and it's by Summer Woods. Now, she is from Southern California, but she caught my eye because on Bandcamp, I noticed that she had a whole thing dedicated to Ween, one of my favorite bands, so, and Philly band too, so fuck yeah. So I contacted her and I was like, can I play this awesome, fun, poppy kind of song, like, to begin the summertime? And she said, hell yeah. So thank you, Summer Woods. You are awesome. When we get back, we'll do our usual begging for your attention.
Believe me, even if this made any sense, it'd be crazy. Cause in my head, I call you baby, even though I'm not supposed to. Yeah, I'm falling. I like the offbeat way that you move. Cause you're like a symphony played on a kazoo. And I can't explain why I wanna know you by heart, darling. I'm singing all the wrong words to the love songs. I don't even know how they're supposed to go anymore. Yeah. It sounds a little wrong, sounds kinda funny, but I don't know what I ever sang them the right way for. When I fall, face first on the pavement, my bones are breaking. When I fall, straight down head over toes, out the 16th story window. Every time you make me smile, I fall, for you I do.
Fucking Ween, man.
Fucking Ween.
Ocean Man. Take me by the hand, take me from the land, if you understand.
My personal favorite is, my dinner's on fire while she's watching TV. And if you ever wonder what it's like to be me, she takes all my money and leaves me no smokes. If you want to hear Cord sing some more, we might be adding that as a special Patreon-only episode.
Oh, baby.
All right, if you want to join the squad, head over to patreon.com/missionspooky. We have tiers of the $1, $3, and $5 levels. One single buck gets you undying gratitude, access to our booper reels, access to our archive state episodes with just me and JC, and a shout-out on the cast. How fast can I do this? The $3 level gets you early access to our side missions and exclusive access to Kiki's Quirks, other side topics saved for just Patreon folks, which I now know what we're doing, and Cord and I already completed one, and it should be up there by the time this airs. Yay! You also receive access to a digital stat block card and art card for Cord versus Cryptid, which should be back. Lastly, you have access to our exclusive state episodes, which now include $5 level gets you access to private Discord server, which I have been doing a once a month Discord get together, but so far nobody's joined me because people suck. I love them. They give us their money, but they're not.
Sorry.
I know. They just don't want to listen to me talk any more than I guess they listen to me talk. I don't know. Anyone can join our regular Discord community, which we are trying to grow. We have channels dedicated to cryptids, ghosts, and UFOs. We have a place for you to promote yourself. If you're an artist or author, musician, fellow podcaster, we have a D&D chat in there, general gaming. Basically, we just want you to come hang out with us and nerd out with us. And
yeah, we need more people to talk to.
Right? By now, I would have recorded the final episode of Tales of Thurn story arc that includes my character, Daphne. Moment of silence for Daphne.
Rip.
She's not dead. I just want a moment of silence.
Wow.
Well, wait. I don't know. Maybe I am dead. I don't know.
Say spoilers. Jeez.
No, I don't know. I have no idea. As I am recording this, this is Daphne. I have no idea if I am dead or not. But if I died, I hope it was good. You know? Yeah.
I hope it was worth it.
Hopefully it was worth it, and I died protecting the people I care about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't care about anyone more than myself. I'm just kidding. No, she's a great character. If you, wow. you will have time if you want to listen to the story arc. Seasons 1, 2, and 3. I don't join until season 3. But if you want to, you'll have a few months to go back and listen to all of it. It's usually only an hour and a half long. So it's not like you're trying to catch up with Critical Role, but it will take you like 8 years of your life.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. If you don't want to have to go back in time and do that story arc, I totally understand. And the good news is that we will all be playing brand new characters with a brand new story arc starting in, we'll record in August, just found out. But that probably won't drop then until like October. So I'm saying you still have plenty of time if you want to go back in the first 3 seasons, which is its own story with its own characters. If you don't feel like it, boom, baby, you got us brand new. And you guys are going to freaking love the new character. She's crazy.
Man, I want to play D&D so damn bad.
Well, Cord might be making an appearance in season 4.
They canceled, my group canceled on me this week. So I'm like,
Bastards. Bastards.
We just going to fight the boss.
Yep, you can also follow us on Twitter until it self-destructs and on Instagram at Mission Spooky. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, Podchaser, and Good Pods. Just remember to be kind, because we do this for free, basically. Yeah.
Yep.
We make just enough money that it pays for itself, and that's it. So, but it's a labor of love, and we enjoy doing it, and we love getting to talk to really freaking cool-ass people. So
I like hanging out.
Right? And talking about spooky shit.
Yeah.
Taking us out once again is going to be Summer Woods with her song When I Fall, which is available on Bandcamp and Spotify. And as always, stay spooky and don't die. But if you do, contact us.
I think the easiest way to contact us right now is probably writing a message on the hood of my car through the pollen. I'm dying out here.
I do. Lately I've had a hole in my chest. Fill it up with the scribbles of stuff you've said and your colors, cause they always remind me the world ain't all shady. I see adventures in all your smiles. Just pull my arm, take me along for the ride. Introduce me to that person inside of me. I missed her daily, singing all the wrong words to the love songs. I don't even know how they're supposed to go anymore. Sounds kind of funny, but I don't know what I ever sang them the right way for. Okay, you see what I'm trying to say, darling? When I fall, face first on the pavement. My bones are breaking. When I fall, straight down, head over toes, out the 16th story window. And I stumble like a fool, like a fool. When I fall, face first on the pavement. My bones are breaking. When I fall, straight down, head over toes, out the 16th story window. Every time you make me fall, I fall, face first on the pavement. My bones are breaking.